Hello, everyone. We are back on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and we thank you, as always, for being with us this week. As always, we have our Pro Football Weekly NFL writer, Eric Edholm, with us. And Eric, how's it going, man?
Everything's okay, man. Just settling in for the holiday week and getting ready for training camp in a few weeks. Crazy.
Awesome. Also joining us is Pro Football Weekly managing editor, Arthur Arkish. What's going on, Arthur?
Gentlemen, hope we're doing well. Ready for a nice fireworks display beginning tomorrow, but we'll have one on the podcast here for you guys right about now.
Arthur, it sounds like you're already set up for the fireworks. Like I hear the birds in the background. Are you just chilling, like in some lawn chairs, hanging out, ready?
I am in 4th of July mode. I won't tell you what time it is or what I'm drinking, but we're ready to celebrate. And I do apologize to the listeners because we had to be flexible this week with recording stations. And I'm actually sitting outside Starbucks and hoping no more loud motor. Motorcycles pass by while we're
doing it. Well, it's a beautiful day here in Chicago, and I hope wherever you're listening, you have a beautiful day happening as well. On our last podcast, we continued our division by division breakdowns in the NFC East, talking about the floors and ceilings of each team. This week, we are focusing on the NFC North. Of course, our hometown Chicago Bears in that division. Plus, Arthur Arkish covers the NFC North for the USA Today Sports Weekly as well. So we should have some great insights for you guys this week. We also take a look at the NFC North win totals later in the show and get you our wagers. Guys, let's lead off with some headlines. We're going to start with the continuing news on Jameis Winston and the groping allegations stemming from an Uber ride back in November, which resulted in a 3-game suspension, which was handed out this past week. Arthur, let's start with the NFL's ridiculous punishment guidelines, or shall I say lack thereof. I think everyone would agree that the actions such as Winston's deserves this suspension, but the NFL is not doing themselves any favors by handing out a less severe punishment for an action that, in my opinion, is far greater than deflated footballs, which will get you a 4-game suspension. I mean, what is Roger Goodell doing here?
Yeah, I'm glad you started there, Dan. And obviously, there's no excusing Jameis Winston's behavior. It's disturbing and is kind of repeat behavior at this point. But for the NFL's part, well, frankly, it's also disturbing behavior and repeat stuff from the NFL, too. The sort of enhanced or strengthened, personal conduct policy that was put in action in 2014 was supposed to come with a baseline 6-game suspension for any type of sexual assault or misconduct, anything like that. But the NFL acted cowardly here. They didn't want to go through another legal, snafu like they did with Zeke Elliott last season that was commanding so many headlines off the field. So they sort of cowered here, and they reduced the suspension from 6 to 3 games in exchange for Jameis Winston admitting that he was drinking and apologizing to the Uber driver, but not apologizing specifically or admitting guilt, just that he had done some things that he regretted. So, look, I can't pretend to be surprised. This happens time and time again with the NFL, but it's just it's frankly absurd that they would find a way to screw this one up. I think the announcement came 2 hours after they had just slapped that fine on Jerry Richardson for his own workplace misconduct. So it's like, yeah, we're going to try and drop the hammer here, but if you're Jameis Winston, you're going to get a pass.
It is absolutely frustrating. And Eric, I know we discussed it last week, but how does this 3-game suspension affect the Buccaneers as they start their season?
Well, yeah, there's two ways to look at it. How do they adjust? And obviously we know Ryan Fitzpatrick is their backup. And even if you look back at what he did last year, he played pretty well, especially compared to how he played with the Jets in 16. But then there's also the franchise view, which is, what do they do with him after this year? They've got his 5th-year guarantee that they picked up for his contract in 2019, but it's only guaranteed for injury. They still have to make a long-term decision and a huge one on his future with the franchise. And so, when you look around the NFL, there aren't a ton of teams that are just dying for quarterback help, who have no sort of view of the long-term at that position. But they might be added to the list rather quickly. Because if they decide this is going to be, like Arthur said, repeat behavior and we can't predict what he'll do in the future, they might be one of the leading teams to be able to, to be looking to draft a quarterback next year.
Guys, while we're on the subject of suspensions, let's talk a few minutes about some others handed out around the league. Arthur, we'll start with Colts running back Robert Turbin, suspended 4 games for a PED violation. Is he on the roster bubble for the Colts?
Yeah, I would say he has to be considered on the bubble because he was originally brought in by the previous regime, Ryan Grigson, of course, and Chuck Pagano, and he's managed to survive. Chris Ballard has actually went out of his way to compliment him, I think, over the past couple years. But Chris Ballard has also drafted three of his own backs now when you're talking about Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines, and Jordan Wilkins. So they value Robert Turbin's pass protection, but he's not going to give, you know, he's pretty decent in short yardage. But yeah, I mean, when you're going to start the season suspended when you brought in all these new studs and at least one of which you think might be able to do what Turbin can, yeah, I think roster bubble is an apt way to describe where Turbin sits today.
And Eric, Eagles linebacker Nigel Bradham has been suspended for the first game of the 2018 NFL season on an aggravated assault charge from back in 2016. The Eagles re-signed Bradham to a five-year contract in March. The deal is worth $40 million, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Are the Eagles going to miss him in Game 1 versus the Falcons?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a game where, you know, you look at the Falcons offense in its peak form and you say this is the team that could bounce back after a, you know, a tough first season with Steve Sarkisian. I think the Falcons are going to be a really good team this year. So, yeah, that's obviously a little bit of a tough loss for that one game. Probably not shocking that he was cost that game, even though this thing has kind of dragged on a while. But you'll see him more in nickel, and that puts a little more pressure back on Jordan Hicks coming back from injury. And you know, they don't have a lot of depth there. That's probably the one position where you say to yourself, boy, they're not all that deep. This is a great roster, top to bottom. I mean, they really do have talent in almost every spot. But linebacker might be the one, unless you're kind of projecting somebody to step forward. They've drafted a couple guys in recent years, but still, that's probably one of their weakest positions once you get past their starters.
Well, guys, we're talking about losing talent and the Seattle Seahawks. Oof. Cam Chancellor appearing to be retiring, perhaps the biggest void in Seattle. Arthur, it seems the Seahawks are definitely not what they used to be. I mean, how does this retirement affect their season?
Well, I mean, it's possible that by the time week one rolls around, there will be no members left of the Legion of Boom. Earl Thomas, of course, currently the only holdover, and he's a holdout and not happy about his contract. So remains to be seen what happens there. But look, Chancellor, the enforcer, you know, all these guys are pretty physical. You can't play in that defense without it. But Chancellor's the intimidator back there and helped set the tone for what's been one of the toughest defenses, one of the more disciplined defenses in football over the past handful of years. And not an easy guy to replace. They've got some youngsters. They've been trying to stockpile talent in that secondary between draft picks. And then, of course, Brad McDougal, the guy who comes back after the one-year deal last season. So there are some options, but these aren't the types of players that you just replace. I mean, they helped instill a culture in Seattle. And I just continue to think this is becoming more and more about Russell Wilson and leaning more on him in the offense, if that's even possible, as this defense continues to transition.
Eric, we're about a week away from the supplemental draft that's happening on July 11th. Perhaps the Seahawks find maybe a little more talent there. Can you give us a supplemental draft update as we're heading towards that date?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they might be one of those teams that's involved, and there have been about half a dozen teams that have done more work than other clubs. And so we started out with the first three guys who declared: Adonis Alexander, a big long corner from Virginia Tech; Sam Beal, a little bit of a leaner build, a corner as well from Western Michigan. I think Beal is probably the first to go off the board. And those two are really the only two that are probably – I don't say guaranteed, but sure, likely to be drafted. Another really talented player, Brandon Bryant, but one who kind of has no clue what he's doing out there. He's had some academic issues, got departed, or was asked to leave Mississippi State. He's in the mix. Athletically, he belongs on a roster. Football wise, character wise, big questions of whether he deserves to be in a camp. Two other names have been added recently, which is really interesting. I didn't know much about Bright Owegbu, kind of a lean pass-rushing linebacker from Oregon State. I watched a little of him, and then I saw his pro day results, and I was shocked how small he was. He was listed at like 6'1", 205 pounds. So there are, you know, Adonis Alexander, the corner, is bigger than that. And then you see what Owegbu ran, and he was in the 4.9, 5.0, 40 range. So defensive tackle speed, cornerback safety build, you know, kind of an unknown position. I really can't see him drafted. If there's an interesting long shot, it's this kid from Grand Valley State, a running back named Martavius Carter, known to his friends as Marty. But this is a former D2 player of the year, you know, had some D1 feelers coming out of high school, has some you know, interesting burst, probably more likely to end up on a roster as an undrafted supplemental pick. But, you know, we're talking about a kid who rushed for like almost 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns as a sophomore. So a little bit of a back tick this last year. But I think it's more likely that he gets a shot, but that he isn't drafted. Still, we have five names, two guys who could be drafted. This is one of the more interesting supplemental crops that we've seen in about 4 or 5 years.
I was going to say, I mean, the supplemental draft, we talked about it, I think, last week, that it's not really a hot topic. I don't think a whole lot of people really even pay much attention to it. But, I mean, this one seems exciting. I think that there's a couple potential prospects there that the teams can really add to their roster and really add some good depth there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about exciting. I don't know that I'd go quite that far. And, yeah, I mean, you are a football hardcore guy. I get that. And as Arthur and I are too. But, yeah, it's the thing is, you probably have to, if you're a team going to be spending a third, fourth, fifth round pick on either Beal or Alexander, you're probably preparing yourself to carry him on the roster and not have him be active right away, because they have not been a part of the team's OTAs. They're getting kind of thrown into training camp 2 weeks, you know, after they're drafted. This is like a stash and play in 2019 kind of pick. Now, maybe Beal has some coverage ability where he can be a dime, you know, corner. Maybe Alexander can be a gunner or something like that, or a fourth corner on a big press team. But, yeah, I don't know that any of these guys are going to be playing significant minutes this coming season.
Arthur, as we wrap up our headlines, what is the holdup with Aaron Rodgers' contract?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it sounds like it's remained civil between both sides, and they've said they've made progress and they hope to have something done soon. But this might just be as simple as, well, the fact that there's nothing simple about trying to script a record-breaking deal and make sure that, you know, it works for both sides. I don't think that the fully guaranteed contract for Kirk Cousins helped, although in my opinion, I maintain that was truly a perfect storm. I mean, a guy getting ready to enter a bidding war. I don't believe Aaron Rodgers is getting a fully guaranteed contract, or any team that, or any quarterback that's seeking an extension with their current team is going to be in play for that, you know, in this current day and age, regardless. But, you know, I don't think the Packers have any doubt about what Rodgers is, even coming off the injury. He's had that collarbone broken twice now, but he's only 34 years old. That he should be in the prime of his career, I would think, for several more years, assuming the injuries don't become an issue again. So I think this is just about when you're talking about such absurdly high numbers and a couple other blueprints that have been laid out there, that they're trying to make sure that they, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's and get this one right.
Well, we'll definitely have more on Rodgers later on in our show as we approach that Packers chat as we go around the NFC North. As I said at the top of the show, we're continuing our division-by-division breakdowns and talking about some of the potential for each team and where they might need improvements. And as I said, this week we are focusing on the NFC North. Guys, let's start with the Chicago Bears, perhaps one of the most interesting teams in the NFC North this season, as we just don't know what to really expect with the Bears. They've certainly changed the feeling in that locker room, and with new head coach Matt Nagy leading the way and workhorse quarterback Mitch Trubisky eating and breathing everything about football. I mean, every time I hear somebody talking to this guy about football, this is all he's focused on. Arthur, perhaps the Bears are a team to watch in 2018.
Yeah, I think so. They've been, I would agree, one of the more exciting teams this offseason, but I think we have to keep in mind, you know, four consecutive double-digit loss seasons, finishing in the basement of the NFC North now for four straight seasons. So, and that's over two head coaches between Mark Trussman and John Fox. So clearly only one way to go here. But, you know, when you have as much optimism at the quarterback position as you've had in a couple decades, frankly, at least in Chicago, and you go out and you get the coach who you think is going to be kind of a two peas in a pod type situation with Trubisky, because he brings in this QB friendly offense, this innovation, pretty much the antithesis of what we saw during the John Fox regime. I do think all the excitement is warranted, and it does feel like, still, because of, you know, the additions of Allen Robinson and you know, Trey Burton and Matt Nagy, as we alluded to, and Mark Helfrich, I do think we're still maybe sleeping on this defense a little bit, which finished top 10 in points and yards allowed last season for the first time since the Lovie Smith days. So that has a chance to be a great unit. And I do think that the offense has a chance to make some really impressive strides in short order here. With this new regime.
Well, and Eric, let's talk a moment about Trubisky and Nagy. Perhaps a match made in heaven, or closer to a Peterson and Wentz kind of vibe year one than McVay and Goff's last year. I mean, what are you thinking about the connection between these two guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the range. I mean, obviously, when Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson started things in 2016. Wentz was a rookie. Peterson was a first-time head coach. So, you know, obviously Mitch comes in with 12 starts and 13 starts in college. So, you know, his experience is limited. You kind of put him somewhere in between there. And like you said, what McVay and Goff did last season. I think Peterson-Wentz year one is kind of the floor for what Trubisky and Nagy can do this season. And McVay, Goff would be the ceiling. So it's probably going to be somewhere in that range. I know that's a little bit of a wide range because, you know, after Carson Wentz started so well his first three games, he struggled in Detroit. You look at his final, you know, 8-9 games of that season, he had something like 12 touchdown passes. And you know, there wasn't a lot of playmaking. There were some letdowns on fourth down in the red zone and things like that. So this thing is not going to flip overnight. We're going to see exciting flashes, but there may be a regression at some point in the middle of the season. And that's the thing. I hope Bears fans can temper their enthusiasm knowing that really it is a long play here. This isn't just gearing up for this year, obviously. It's what could this group be 2 years from now, three, four? And that's what's really exciting, even though I do think the Bears are among the more improved clubs this offseason.
Arthur, I think there were a lot of questions heading into this offseason about some of the pass catchers for the Bears. And they went out, they got wide receiver Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, tight end Trey Burton. Is this the most improved unit in the NFL right now?
Well, you're putting it nicely, Dan, to say there were a lot of questions. You know, the Bears were arguably, and they did see the Ravens. They did beat the Ravens. So maybe they were tied for the worst pass-catching core in the NFL last season. But it was awful. Adam Shaheen, as a second-round rookie, led them in touchdowns with three. So the most improved unit in the NFL, gosh, I'm hard-pressed to find a more improved one elsewhere. You mentioned the names. And I think when you get past the names, I think it's the way that these styles figure to play together, to complement each other. I think it's really potentially very exciting when you've got the after-catch guys, an after-catch guy like Anthony Miller, the big-bodied downfield target, and Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, who is just fast as, I don't even know. He's really fast, one of the fastest players in the entire NFL. And then Trey Burton, who's supposed to be this perfect fit in the Nagy offense because he's going to move around from snap to snap and be so hard to locate. So, yes, they have a huge amount of talent, but I think as much as that, it's the way that these guys are going to play off of each other and give Matt Nagy the flexibility he needs to bring this 21st century offense to Chicago that Bears fans have been dying to see.
Well, and Arthur, what can Kevin White contribute on this as he comes back?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that it behooves the Bears to cut Kevin White, so I do anticipate he sticks around for his final year in Chicago, but I don't think he's going to be handed anything. He did run with the ones throughout the offseason. The reports were more encouraging, outside reports, than what I saw the limited time I was there. But he does look healthy, and he does look very good. If you've seen him, follow him on Instagram or anything like that, this dude is in great shape. And if he can start to show that size-athleticism combo that made him formerly the seventh overall pick, we'll see. But I think that's getting ahead of ourselves. Let's see if he can stay healthy and carve out a role in this offense, because with all this fresh blood in here, I don't think that's guaranteed at all.
Eric, let's talk a minute about the offensive line and that backfield as well. Is this going to be a bounce back season for Kyle Long?
Yeah, he's kind of the linchpin, you would have to say, and a player who, you know, obviously a multi-Pro Bowl player who, you know, has been at different spots, has sort of handled his duties beautifully when he's been healthy. But, yeah, obviously there's a lot of question about whether he can get back to that form after battling injuries last year. You would think he would be a great fit in this type of system that favors instincts, movement skills, that sort of thing. I mean, that's really his game. And you know, in theory, he's perfect. They wouldn't have let Josh sit and go, I don't think, if they didn't feel like they were in pretty good shape. So they draft James Daniels. You know, the tackles aren't amazing, but they're okay. This probably sort of helps out Cody Whitehair a little bit inside. But, yeah, Long sort of stands as maybe the big question up front. And if he's in peak form, boy, that's just another huge boost that they, you know, that they didn't have a lot of the time last season.
And, Eric, I mean, how will Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen split the reps in that backfield?
Yeah, there's been all this talk about how Jordan Howard's going to be phased out and he's not a good fit in Nagy's offense. He doesn't catch the ball well. First of all, I don't think Matt Nagy's ready to throw him to the curb. It would be silly. I mean, he's such a young, talented, you know, even if he's a unitasker, even if he is kind of a one or one and a half trick pony, I mean, he's good at what he does. Why give up on that? There's no reason to. So it's not as if Tariq Cohen is suddenly ready to carry the ball, you know, touch it 300 times this season. I don't think that's what you want to do. You don't want to wear this guy down. You want to use him selectively and pick your spots and maximize his ability as well. So, you know, Jordan Howard ran very well out of the shotgun his first 2 years. That's one thing that's going to benefit him greatly. Bears used shotgun about half the time last year, very much in the bottom of the NFL. Matt Nagy in Kansas City, north of 70% among the top handful of teams. So you can expect him to be out there. I just don't know if they'll be able to use Howard and Cohen together on the field all that much. So we'll see. I mean, I still think Howard's got a big role in this offense in 2018.
Arthur, throughout the offseason and throughout some of these mini camps, we have seen the Bears defense has always looked as though they've been ahead of the curve as they've been practicing, and they look like they're a pretty solid unit. I mean, what is the ceiling for this defense after touching top 10 in rankings last season and adding Roquan Smith, and what do you think they must do to get better, really?
Well, they got to continue to take the football away for sure. And I don't think, Bears fans should be concerned to hear that maybe the offense was a little bit behind at times. That's what happens when the defense brings back 10 of 11 starters and their defensive coordinator. So that's the value of continuity in having these guys together. And at this point, these are, you know, mostly Vic Fangio's, you know, if they're not his hand-picked guys, they're the guys that he has groomed and put in so much time with and really is starting to trust. So as far as, you know, what's a reasonable ceiling, I mean, I don't know. I guess you maybe go from top 10 to top 5. I mean, I do think they have the ability to be one of the better units in the NFL, but I still do have some legitimate concerns because, you know, taking the football away is obviously going to always be one of the biggest, you know, most important ingredients in winning football in the NFL, and the Bears continue to struggle doing that. And they just have put so much of the onus, the pass rush onus now on Leonard Floyd after letting Pernell McPhee and Willie Young and Lamar Houston walk. There is not much here beyond Floyd and Aaron Lynch, the former 49er who's trying to kind of salvage his career now back again with Vic Fangio. So they've got some young guys they're excited about, whether it's David Irving or Roy Robertson Harris. They think maybe Eddie Goldman can give them a little bit more juice up front. Maybe Jonathan Bullard's ready to break out in year three. But those are where my concerns are at. Can Floyd stay on the field and be this alpha dog, this double-digit sack guy they need? And on the back end, is Eddie Jackson going to be this legit instinctive playmaker who's going to be able to flip games and flip the field really quickly like we saw last year? Because they still don't have, you know, Kyle Fuller gets the huge deal and he earned it. And I'm excited about him being back. But Prince Amukamara, not a takeaway specialist. Adrian Amos has made a lot of impressive strides, but taking the football away isn't one of them. So I still kind of just worry about the overall playmaking. But in terms of the depth, in terms of the steadiness down to down, this looks like it can be a really good unit.
Guys, let's turn the page and talk a little bit about the Detroit Lions. Eric, Matt Patricia got off to a tough start with his past dug-up questions about his tough approach, wind sprints, conditioning, things like that during OTAs. But is he the right man for the job here?
Well, I think eventually he will be. And, you know, I obviously know the history of Patriots assistants as head coaches. It's a mixed bag at best. So, obviously, you know, there's that working against him. And I think, you know, on the one hand, it's a little bit worrisome to me. I know this sounds weird and maybe anti-logical, but, you know, everybody tries to be Bill Belichick when they go from the Patriots to another team and get that head coaching job. And he's already using the "do your job" slogan. It's all over, you know, the facility up there in Allen Park. And that's fine. As long as he sets his own tone, as long as he's his own man, as long as he isn't trying to be Bill Belichick Jr., even though, you know, people in New England say that Patricia was, you know, as close to a sort of facsimile to Belichick style-wise, personality-wise, as they've seen up there. You know, other guys tried to be Belichick, and they weren't really him. So maybe it works for Patricia. But year one, even with some talent on the team, I think they've got some things to work out. You've got a great quarterback in Matthew Stafford. That's outstanding. But he's got to be able to fix this defense, get the run game going, and make his own stamp as, you know, if he wants to be that enforcer, that tough guy who's going to lay down the law, you know, it may not bear immediate fruit. And that's what I think Lions fans have to consider, that this is a pretty competitive team last year, but they may take a small step backward before they go forward, in my mind.
And Arthur, let's talk a moment about the run game changes that this team has. You have Johnson and Blunt have been added. Theo Riddick is still there for third downs. Is Amir Abdullah on his last stand here?
Yeah, I think so. He's you know, holdover from the previous regime, just someone who has not been able to stay on the field and be a difference maker consistently. And those are qualities that I see in Kerryon Johnson, the Auburn guy that they traded up for, the Auburn back they traded up for in round two. So really excited about him. I like the mix, too, of this backfield. When, you know, you mentioned Theo Riddick, obviously the skilled pass catcher. I think Johnson's got the ability. No, he's not a big dude, but he is a determined runner who is going to pick up those extra yards on contact. So I, you know, I kind of wonder what the role is going to be for LeGarrette Blount, to be totally honest, because I think Johnson's going to be able to handle all the early down and short yardage work. And we should mention that the Lions were woefully bad on short yardage, probably cost themselves a couple games last season, if you remember them losing to Atlanta down by the goal line and just all the failed conversions. So I understand the reason for bringing in LeGarrette Blount, but obviously that preceded the Kerryon Johnson pick. And you can't talk about the run game. Yes, we know Reggie Bush go all the way back to 2013, the last time that the Lions had a 100-yard rusher in a game. It's been the worst in football, Detroit's ground game under Bob Quinn, the GM there, the past 2 years. But you can't talk about it without talking about the offensive line, and that's an area that Quinn has really put a lot of investments in and has done so again, obviously, when you're talking about Frank Ragnow and potential value pick later in the draft and Tyrell Crosby. So if those guys can stay healthy, if Rick Wagner and TJ Lang can be a little bit more impressive even in year two in Detroit than they were last season, then you're talking about this thing starting to really come together.
Eric, this offensive line also looks different. Could be better with Taylor Decker back healthy and Frank Ragnow, as Arthur said, moving in, possibly at guard. Let's talk about some of those changes that we've seen on that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, Decker losing him last year was a big blow and just sort of set them off in a bad direction, I think, and just adding a little bit more depth. You know, if Ragnow can make that switch to guard, if Graham Glasgow is the solution at center, you know, all these little adjustments they've made up front, that's going to be big. Now, Decker wants to get paid, obviously, too. You know, we'll see. Different O-line, you know, coach and philosophy up front, maybe a little bit more man blocking. And so we'll see. I mean, I think as Arthur pointed out, the talent is enough there to be pretty good. They just probably can't sustain any of those big injuries like they did last season. That's going to really kind of set them back. And Ragnow could be he was one of my favorite players to watch because he is just a mauler. I mean, he is, you know, a dude up front. I think he can be as effective at guard as he was at center in college at Arkansas. So that was an inspired pick in a lot of ways, even if it doesn't, you know, have all the sex appeal of, you know, a pass rusher or something like that that they were also looking at. I just think that was a nice choice, and that flexibility of playing any of the interior spots is going to help them out.
Arthur, we've also seen on the defense a linebacker overhaul. You have Devin Kennard and Christian Jones and Tahir Whitehead and Paul Werlow out. Upgrading year two with Jared Davis taking a jump. Talk a little bit about some of these changes we've seen with the linebackers in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, Dan, with those two is just flexibility. And of course, that's what kind of defines Matt Patricia, Bill Belichick defenses. It's, you know, taking away the opposition's best weapon. But beyond that, it's just, you know, kind of morphing from different looks and different formations from one down to the next. And I think that's exactly what they're going for with Christian Jones, a guy who can play all three linebacker spots. And Kennard, a guy who was maybe a little underrated with the Giants, I think, and flanking those two around Jared Davis, of course, the first round pick last season, I think makes for a lot of excitement at the second level of the Lions defense. And I think, you know, that's encouraging. I think the secondary is going to be in really good shape too, when you've still got the studs like Lover Quinn and Darius Slay too. But I do worry about up front. With the Lions, they struggled there last year. Ziggy Ansah on the franchise tag. I just don't know if they're going to have enough horses. That's one concern I have for both the Bears and the Lions. The difference between these clubs is that the Lions kind of got by. They had a cologne for their defense in the form of takeaways last season that was missing from the Bears. So can they replicate that? And then is Ziggy Ansah going to stay healthy? Are they going to have enough around him to get after the passer? I have real doubts about that.
Okay, guys, well, we're going to take a quick break, but we have much more ahead as we head around the NFC North. We'll look at some new targets for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, plus how much of an upgrade will Cousins be over Keenum in Minnesota. We'll have that and more coming up. Welcome back, everyone. We are continuing our division-by-division breakdowns and talking about some of the potential for each team and where they might need improvements, focusing this week on the NFC North. And we move now to Green Bay. Guys, Rodgers has some new pass catchers up there, two new veteran tight ends in Jimmy Graham and Mercedes Lewis, and three rookie wide receivers in with Jordy Nelson moving on. Eric, are these targets the replacements Green Bay needs to fill that gap that Nelson leaves behind?
Well, yes and no. And obviously, with Davante Adams, they have a star in place and a guy who has kind of gone full circle and earned the trust of Rodgers and earned every bit of that contract. He'll be the touchdown guy. And I really think Randall Cobb is being slept on a little bit. I mean, he still does some good things. Is he quite the player he was before receiving that big deal a few years back? Probably not. But I still think his versatility, his ability to find space, especially against zone defenses, you know, yards after the catch, all that, he's still a very valuable piece. So, yes, obviously a lot of, you know, big names with Jimmy Graham, Mercedes Lewis, the veteran guy, more of a blocker at this stage, even with, you know, a three-touchdown game last year. And the rookies, they can bring them along at their own pace. You know, they've got Geronimo Allison coming back as well. He's another developmental guy who's flashed a little bit. So, you know, I don't know they'll keep all three of these guys on the roster. Jamon Moore suffered drops in college, and, you know, the Ole Miss kid had flashes of greatness but not consistency. And Equanimeous St. Brown out of Notre Dame. I mean, again, another guy who is super talented but disappointing at times. So, you know, I think focusing on all the new names is a little bit, you know, a fool's errand, even though Graham is clearly going to be a, you know, seam splitter and red zone guy and all that. But don't forget, I mean, Randall Cobb and Davante Adams, to me at least, are still two very good players and maybe a little bit underrated in the big picture.
Arthur, how will the Packers divvy up some of the carries? You have Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, Ty Montgomery, all have starting experience, but I think much to prove individually.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, Mike McCarthy has been on the record, has said repeatedly already that it is going to be a running back by committee situation here. So fantasy owners, you can shudder all you want, but that's just what to expect. And an interesting sort of blend, because all these guys sort of took their turns having at least brief star turns, whether you're talking about Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams as rookies last year, the mid-round rookies who each were, again, really good in brief stints. Jones couldn't quite stay healthy. Williams, he was pretty productive. Maybe not as efficient of a runner as they'd like to see, but I think exceeded expectations for them. And then Ty Montgomery, got to go back a little bit further for his breakout. Actually, it was at Soldier Field. We were all sitting in the press box to watch him just demolish that Bears defense 2 years ago. But I don't really trust Ty Montgomery to stay healthy. He hasn't done it yet in the NFL. And to me, I really think he's going to be best served as a gadget player who is on a pitch count. And I don't know whether the Packers coaches think that or not, but it kind of feels that way when they draft three backs on the heels of Montgomery's breakout last season. So Aaron Jones is the game breaker. Jamal Williams is the masher. And again, I think kind of the gadget guy is going to be Ty Montgomery. That's the way I see this mix playing out.
Eric, on the defense, that secondary, the first two picks were cornerbacks, Jair Alexander, Josh Jackson, a year after taking Kevin King and Josh Jones high, and they also brought back Tremont Williams and Devon House, although Morgan Burnett was let go.
Yeah, a lot of new faces and a really interesting mix of super young and kind of old with some of those the corners, Tremont Williams, Devon House. I mean, look, to me, they're just layers of insurance. You know, if you know, the young guys, they see talent, but they're not ready to play them at this certain level. Okay, I get it. But, you know, I think Alexander was a great pick. I really do. And I think Josh Jackson around two might have been one of my favorite second round picks this past year. And they get the Saints first rounder next season. So I think they're going to, by midseason, we're going to be saying, wow, even though the Packers haven't traditionally played a lot of their young guys, maybe that was a Dom Capers thing. Maybe Mike Pettine is going to take a different approach here. You know, if Mike McCarthy allows him to put Alexander out there as a starter, I think he's that good. Jackson needs maybe a little bit more development, but boy, the upside's there. And yeah, like you said, Jones, King, these guys can't be forgotten about. So, you know, it's crazy to think Clinton Dix is like the grizzly old veteran in that secondary as far as the safeties go. But I like this group. I really do. I think for once we don't have to call this a weakness. In recent years, we have. They've given up some big plays. They haven't known their assignments. They haven't had sticky coverage. Burnett, I love him. You know, he was part of that kind of that nitro package, could play linebacker. But I think it's fine. That's just collateral damage. And they've gotten a lot younger and talented. And I look for an uptick in this group.
And Arthur, can the defense do enough, you think, to make them a Super Bowl contender this year?
Well, the return of Aaron Rodgers, you know, on his own makes the Packers a Super Bowl contender because he's that good. But I'm believing in this defense for sure. It sounds like I'm kind of on the same page with Eric on this one. I think all due respect to Dom Capers, I don't think he's, you know, lost the ability to coach, but maybe he kind of lost the, you know, the ears of some of those young players, and he never seemed, you know, Dom that has never seemed to be on the same page with Ted Thompson and the timelines for getting development from for getting production from these young players. So with Mike Pettine, with his reunion and Muhammad Wilkerson, you got a front with Kenny Clark, Muhammad Wilkerson, and Mike Daniels. That could be one of the best in football. Blake Martinez had his breakout last season. You get Josh Jones back, he's going to be kind of that new nitro linebacker safety, I think, that Eric had mentioned. So talent is not lacking on this group anymore, and we'll see if Pettine can put it all together. But I believe he can. I don't see a lot of real weaknesses in this group, maybe except for edge rush. It looks like that's the same thing with the whole division. If anything happens to Clay Matthews or Nick Perry, they better hope that they're getting the 2015 Muhammad Wilkerson to make sure that they're still getting disruption up front for what has a chance to be a really good playmaking secondary.
We wrap things up in the NFC North in Minnesota. And Eric, the Vikings got themselves Kirk Cousins. How much of an upgrade will he provide over Case Keenum from last season?
It's almost ridiculous to ask this question, but the more I thought about it, you know, Case Keenum, 13 starts last year, played, first of all, about as well as you could have expected out of him. It was a stunning development. Great for him financially. He moves on to the Broncos for a good deal. But, yeah, I mean, this is obviously – you have to look at what he did last year and just marvel at the level at which he played. Anything less than an upgrade over that is going to be considered a disappointment. I think Vikings fans have to be reasonable in the sense that you've got a new OC. The O-line may not be – superb. I mean, I don't think it's bad, but you know, you've got a running back coming off an ACL injury. There's the chemistry that has to be developed here. You know, I mean, Cousins hasn't always been great in the red zone. He does have those kind of crazy looking picks every now and then where you say, what was he thinking on that play? So there's a lot going on. And if they're not this amazing brew right out of the chute, people need to kind of gather themselves a little bit and realize, look, this is something that's going to take a little time. This isn't going to be an instant transformation. So can he be that guy over the long haul? Absolutely. He's a better quarterback than Case Keenum, in my opinion. But is he better right away than what Keenum gave him last year? I honestly don't know. I don't know that it's going to be that different looking.
Arthur, talking about the offensive line, could they be a weakness this season? Berger retires, new offensive system, lack of depth. Are they going to have a tough time protecting Cousins or making the blocks they need to make for that backfield?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. All you got to do is it doesn't seem like that long ago that the Vikings were at an awful offensive line. It was only two seasons ago, and credit to Rick Spielman and Pat Shurmur, too, for remaking that group last year. But there is going to be some turnover. You got Pat Elflein, who unfortunately his rookie season ended early with, a knee injury that required surgery in the offseason. So he's kind of on the mend still, and that's a tough way to start your first full offseason. Some uncertainty whether Mike Remmers is going to be the replacement for Joe Berger at right guard. Kind of underrated Joe Berger, who retired. And I think that depends on whether Brian O'Neill, their second-round pick out of Penn, is ready to make that big jump and maybe hold down the right tackle spot opposite Riley Reed. So, and then you mentioned you got John DeFilippo and a new system coming in. So it's not the most talented group, but it wasn't last year either, and it was enough to get by. So I think that smart play calling is going to be a big part of this. I think that Kirk Cousins' pocket presence and at least being able to avoid a little bit of trouble is going to be a big part of this too. And then I think, once again, just patience. This isn't going to be instant coffee, as they say. It's going to take a little bit of time.
Eric, what are the realistic expectations for Dalvin Cook in year two coming off that ACL injury?
Yeah, I mean, if there was a silver line last year, it was that, you know, he suffered the injury pretty early in the season. He's been able to, you know, get back and have a decent amount of work to get to this point in the offseason. And, you know, he looked really good. I mean, he looked really, you know, sharp last season. And in every game he did a little something to make you think he could be a very good back in this league. So, you know, I'm not a huge Latavius Murray fan, so if Cook goes down again, that's a big worry to me. I think that makes them a lot more one-dimensional. Cook's work as a receiver was really good, and what we saw in the limited sample size there. So, you know, this should be that 300-plus touch back. He was on pace for a lot of work last year before he got hurt, way more than that. I mean, I think he was in the 350 range. So you have to be careful. You've got to pick your spots and not overwork him too much and not expect that he's going to have that same sort of burst. But, yeah, I think he can be up there, you know, with everybody focusing on Diggs and Thielen and Rudolph in the red zone and, you know, some of the other weapons they have. You know, that's where you're at. You lose Jerick McKinnon, you've got to be able to get that receiving running back in the mix. And that's one of the key elements Cook's going to add.
And finally, Arthur, Sheldon Richardson joining the Wall of America. Best defensive lineman out there? What do you think?
Best nickname I've heard for the Vikings defensive line, and I believe it's our own Eric Edholm who came up with that first, so props to Eric. That's awesome. I'm going to have football fans in the state of Pennsylvania who have a problem with me after this podcast, because I think Philadelphia and Pittsburgh probably both can at least make an argument for their groups. But for my money, yes, the Vikings have the best defensive line in football. If Sheldon Richardson is motivated, if he looks anything like the guy that played for the Jets a couple years ago and stays out of trouble, when you put him next to Linval Joseph and then you surround those two with Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin, I don't know what offensive lines, what offensive coordinators are supposed to do, because that is just an explosive, a strong, a dangerous group. And they've actually got some really nice depth, too. When you talk about a couple sort of jars on the shelf they're excited about in Tayshaun Bowser and Stephen Weatherly, Brian Robeson in his last season, obviously a stalwart, has been a productive player for a long time. They drafted Jalen Holmes in round four. So, yes, this is an electric group. And I think the sky is the limit. But frankly, guys, that's what we've been saying about this defense overall for 2 years now, right? And it's been great for the first three quarters, first 80%, 90% of the season, and then the late year meltdown. So that's, you know, Mike Zimmer, I'm sure number one on his list for this season is making sure that he can get his defense to play. He hopes for 19 consecutive weeks at a dominant level, because we haven't yet seen that. We've just seen it in you know, even long spurts. And man, the outcome has been exciting.
And I might just throw in there, the Jaguars will probably have a seat at that table as far as best D-line ever, right? And I also have to clarify, I'm not 100% sure that I coined the Mall of America. I didn't put any trademark rights on or anything like that. You know, the Deflategate that I probably may have been the first to use, I'll claim that one. I don't know about Mall America, but I do love the ring of it, yeah.
And my bad, I asked Eric about this off air, and he said he wasn't sure, and I did that anyway. So,
no, you know, like I said, I just don't want some water from Edina to start, you know, throwing you know, hate mail at me or anything like that.
I'm glad you said it. And before we move on, guys, we should just quickly mention, because I'll be a broken record, I say it on this podcast all the time, but it's just the latest example of why teams should get to their stars early. If you want to get an extension done with your homegrown talent, do it right away. Danielle Hunter is the latest example. He got a big deal. Yeah, I think, what, 5 years, $72 million gets a lot of change. But gosh, if he gets to the free market, or if he gets to a point where they're deciding between the tag and a long-term deal, his leverage grows. He gets an even bigger contract. So credit to the Vikings for getting that deal done. Danielle Hunter, only 23 years old. Talk about the sky is the limit. That dude is an absolute beast.
Well, you bring up a great point. They sign Eric Kendricks. So all they have to worry about now is Stephon Diggs,
yep,
and Anthony Barr. And you let one of them go. That, you know, if Barr is the one to go, fine. Okay. You know, if, I mean, look, I hope they keep Diggs. I think it's a great fit in that offense. But you made a great point. The Eagles did it for years, too. Get your guys signed young and keep them there. Patriots make key decisions on guys. They know when to cut bait. They know when to keep somebody. It's a great team-building method that I think is such an underrated element in the salary cap era.
And I love Anthony Barr, and I love Stephon Diggs in particular, but I don't think it's an accident that these are the last two guys waiting. Yeah. If you look at some minor durability concerns with Stephon Diggs, of course, and he hasn't, you know, I don't think he's played his best 16 games consecutively yet. There's no doubt about it. And then Anthony Barr, he's been called out a little bit for coasting, probably one of the most physically gifted players in all the NFL. But when your coach is saying, you know, you're coasting sometimes, again, I don't think this is any coincidence that these are the two guys waiting. We still assume they're going to get done, or at least one of them does. And then the other one's probably the odd man out, I assume, with along with Trey Waynes, when you look at their first-round draft picks, their recent high-round picks at cornerback.
Guys, we'll head into our NFC North wrap-up in a minute by looking at some win totals, but I was curious to get your thoughts on the overall standings of this division. I know we have a lot of upside to some of these teams, and I also know that everything seems to be leaning towards the Packers coming out on top in January. What are your thoughts here?
I'm actually a little surprised you said that. Now, I'm starting to really warm up to the Packers, as you know, the idea of them being a Super Bowl type of contender. You know, if things go right, Rodgers stay healthy, all that stuff. But I obviously, the Vikings' love has been prolific too, Arthur. And it's like, you know, they were 13-3 last year. They, in theory, upgraded it at quarterback. They get Dalvin Cook back. You know, I mean, at peak potential, this Vikings team is, I don't want to say unstoppable, but really darn good. So, you know, that's very interesting to hear in that perspective.
Yeah, Eric took the words out of my mouth. We do have to mention, actually, Pro Football Weekly. We polled all of our writers, and in our 2018 preview magazine, which is available on newsstands now, we picked the Vikings to get to the Super Bowl. So clearly, our consensus does like Minnesota, and that includes me. I think Minnesota might have the best roster 1 through 53 in the entire NFL. So I love Aaron Rodgers. And again, he immediately makes the Packers also Super Bowl contenders. But I'm kind of the old adage. It's the Vikings that have to be knocked off that perch until further notice. They belong there as well. But again, two Super Bowl contenders, in my opinion, legit Super Bowl contenders in this division right now. And I think four teams that all have a chance at least to have winning records. This just might be kind of this year's version of the NFC South. It'll be in the running for the best division in football.
Guys, get that skull chant going.
I can hear it, man. And after last year's disappointment, I mean, the way that the season ended, they felt like they were riding on a high. They were going to stroll into Philadelphia, go up against the backup quarterback, and win that game. They score first, and then just get absolutely boat raced by the Eagles. I mean, what does that do to the psyche of the team? You've got the new quarterback coming in, and trying to ride that delicate balance a little bit about being a leader and also letting the core of this group kind of shine through. I mean, it's such a fascinating year for them. And you know, we know Mike Zimmer's chops as well, but you know, I keep having that feeling there's going to be a letdown at some point along the way. I don't know. That's just maybe their history as a franchise that's seeped into my brain a little bit.
And Eric, remember, it was just 2 years ago that, you know, Xavier Rhodes was not, following orders of Mike Zimmer. Yeah. And they had a couple embarrassing games on big stages in December two seasons ago. So, again, this is something that they have to address. And they obviously have the talent to do it. I believe they have the coaching to do it. But you have to have answers for why you suddenly melt down when it looks like you are a favorite or you're an absolute contender and the season ends otherwise.
Well, guys, let's look at some NFC North win totals and get some over-unders going. And here are some of the projections. So you have the Chicago Bears projected with 6.5 wins. I think that they have a lot of upgrades on this team, and while there's still some questions in that offense, especially perhaps with some of those receivers, I think that they have what it takes to win more than six. So I'm taking the over here. Arthur, how about you?
I'm also taking the over. 5-11 last season, but haven't gotten to 500 since 2013, Mark Trussman's first year. That's about where I see him this season in the first year under Matt Nagy. I think this is an 8-8 club, possibly a 9-7 team. I mean, we already discussed all the reasons. I think that when you give a promising quarterback like Mitch Trubisky the tools he needs, you're going to see a huge jump from him, and no reason to think that the defense is going to let down now with all the cohesiveness it has in that unit.
Yeah, I'm an over guy as well. Schedule's tricky. You know, they don't catch a break. They get Winston when he comes back. I mean, who knows? That could be a rusty Jameis having not practiced you know, prior to that week. So still, I'm not worried about that particular game. They should win that one. And so, yeah, I mean, you look at it and it sort of looks like an 8-8 kind of a team or 9-7. I picked the Rams to go 8-8. I really kind of thought like that was a reach last year. And obviously we saw them kind of take that step forward. A lot of people have made the comparison, but I'm not going to 11 wins. I don't think we're seeing that in this division. But I do think a step up, as you said, is more likely than not.
Guys, the Detroit Lions are projected with 8 wins. I think that the Lions are going to find themselves towards the bottom of a rising NFC North, and I'm taking the under here. Eric, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going under too, and it's funny. It's almost like I'm talking myself into it here a little bit because, you know, I mean, they probably even have a tougher schedule than the Bears do, but they got the quarterback. I mean, that's the quarterback and the receivers, and that's something that even though we talked about some of those situational foul-ups, right, the short yardage stuff, the red zone stuff, you know, they were in a lot of games last year, and they were, what, 9-7. So, you know, expecting them to take a step back, you have to kind of assume a few things are going to fall apart. So my theory on this is that first-year head coach, you know, going, you know, completely against what they were doing last season probably factors into that. Not that Matt Patricia's a bad coach, but this is just sort of the natural byproduct of that. So, you know, do they have upgrades on the roster from last year? Yeah. I still wouldn't be shocked if the record was worse, even if this team isn't necessarily less talented than a year ago.
This one's really tough for me, so it's pretty much a coin flip. I guess I'm going to go over. Probably Matt Stafford, I guess, is the great equalizer here. He has been so good the past couple seasons. Matt Patricia wisely retains Jim Bob Cooter. They got Kenny Golladay, who I think is a legit year two breakout. I already shared my excitement for Kerryon Johnson. So I think the offense may be able to kind of take a little bit of the pressure off the defense as it transitions. And I can see them getting a 9-7 as well. Again, we said it was going to be a really good division, so I guess that backs it up a bit.
Guys, we've talked a lot about the success that we think that the Packers and the Vikings are going to have this season. And starting with the Packers, they're projected to win 10. I'm taking the over here as much as I hate to do this as a Bears fan. But I think if Rodgers can stay healthy, and he will come back and do what Aaron Rodgers does, and that is win games and most likely win more than 10. Arthur, how about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. That's 3 in a row. I really like the talent of this club. I don't think that they're going to have the most difficult time kind of passing along the baton to the new pass catchers, because when you have Rodgers, I think that makes it a little bit easier. I think the defense is going to overachieve. And yeah, I think 11-5 is well within this club's reach.
Yeah, I'll go over. I think it's reasonable to think that 11-5 or even 12-4 is possible. And I know this team has, you know, sometimes had kind of the early season blues a little bit, or, you know, Rodgers' injury will complicate things. I mean, I just don't want to let history factor into this too much, because I just look at the team and say, secondary is going to be better. I think the defense as a whole will achieve at a higher level. Rodgers back has to give you at least 3-4 more wins, even though they were pretty good in close games last year. In theory, the running back situation is better. So, yeah, a little bit of finger crossing going on, but I'll go over on that one.
And with the Minnesota Vikings, guys, I'm sure we're most likely all taking the over here as well. They are projected to win 10 as well. Again, I'm taking the over. I think that the Vikings come back and find their way back into the playoffs as they did in 2017, probably winning more than the Packers to sit on top of that NFC North. Arthur, I'll come back to you as well. What do you think?
Yeah, Dan, I feel like we're doing the NFC East podcast again because I'm kind of doing some quick math in my head as we're doing these picks. And if I just took the first three teams to go over, I don't feel like I can go over again. So I'm going to go under on the Vikings. And I think it's not because it's going to be a disappointing season. I think it's because how you finish, not how you start. They may stumble out of the gate after reading all their press clippings and everyone saying how unstoppable they should be. But I do think that they hit their stride at the right time this season. But maybe that comes after a 10-6, possibly even a wild card berth. I got to go under on one of these clubs I'm going to make in Minnesota.
I need to do a little work. I need to do a little homework to find out the last time we had a team where, or a division, I should say, where all four teams were 500 or better. I think it's been a while. So I have to look at that. The NFC South was a really competitive division. They led the NFL in victories with 37 last year. But the Bucs still brought up the rear. There's usually that one team that does that. I remember in the mid-2000s, the NFC East always had at least three, if not four, competitive teams. So maybe that's where I need to start looking. But, yeah, I mean, it would be surprising to see four teams that are 8-8 or better. But that said, I'm not going to go. I can't say that the Vikings are going to be an 8-8 team if they don't get just ravaged by injuries. I'll say it's a push. I think 10-6 is a reasonable record, but that's still – a three-game drop from where they were last year, which is, you know, you just look at it in those terms, you say, geez, that's a healthy little drop for what should be a very, very good football team.
Well, don't forget, guys, you can find our win total breakdowns for all 32 teams at ProFootballWeekly.com as part of our 2018 NFL Gambling Guide series focused specifically on NFL wagering, so be sure to check those out. Guys, great division talk this week. I know we're coming up on a holiday, depending on how people are listening to this podcast. If you're catching us after the 4th, we certainly hope that you guys had a great 4th of July. But if you're catching us before the 4th of July, guys, are any big 4th of July plans? Eric, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm going to stay clear of any JPP-related activities. I know we make this joke every year. It's unfair. I love Jason Pierre-Paul. I love his attitude since the accident has happened, too. And he's done a lot of good things with helping other people who've lost digits and things like that. So the joke is only meant in good taste. But, yeah, no, staying low-key with the kids. It should be fun.
How about you, Arthur?
Yeah, same here. Staying low-key with the little ones. Our 3-year-old will be excited to check out some fireworks. I know I'll be excited to eat some good barbecue. But most importantly, we just wish all of our listeners have a very happy and healthy 4th of July. But also, just be safe out there, guys, because, you know, there's temptations to do silly things like Jason Pierre-Paul. Let's just take it easy and have some fun, wholesome family 4th of July fun.
All right, guys. Well, that will do it for this week's episode of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. Also, head on over to ProFootballWeekly.com for the best NFL news 24/7. Next week, we'll be looking at the NFC South in our division breakdown, so be sure to watch for that. As always, a big thanks to Humphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Out of Order. You can find them on iTunes, so go check them out. We want to thank you once again for listening. As Eric and Arthur said, we hope you all had a great 4th of July. If you're catching this afterwards, otherwise, please stay safe out there, guys. For Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, I'm Dan Mott. We'll talk to you all next week. Take care, everyone.